Hello, friends and fans. It's been a windy week here in Denver with fans breathing a bit easier, bouncing back in a big way after the Seattle game and the bye week with a 21-point win over the Cardinals. This is your DenverBroncos.com podcast, and I'm your host, Ben Swanson. Well, members of the 1972 Dolphins can relax a bit earlier this year than normal, with both undefeated teams taking their first L of the season. Cincinnati fell to New England 43-17, and Arizona lost, of course, to Denver this week. Records fell on Sunday on offense as the Broncos brought a firestorm in the air, with Manning taking advantage of the Cardinals' blitz-heavy defense. Demaryius Thomas destroyed the record for receiving yards in a single game with 226 yards and two touchdowns, and Manning set his career record for single-game passing yards with 479. It was a bit of an easy game for the offense, and perhaps an easier game for the defense, who really clamped down after the first couple drives. I mean, they totaled 115 yards after the first quarter, and if you exclude the pretty lucky 81-yard touchdown in the third quarter, they only had an average of about 11 yards in each of the final three quarters. The pass rush was particularly vicious, especially Von Miller, who looked like the Von Miller of old, making quarterbacks uncomfortable and getting them out of their timing. It was a pretty dominant win, especially if you consider the long touchdown, maybe not fluky, but definitely an aberration on a mostly dominant second half. I'm joined by columnist Andrew Mason now to break this game down. On a day with so many milestones and records, who impressed you the most on Sunday?
Well, obviously, anytime you set a team record like Demaryius Thomas did, he's going to be at the top of the list. Certainly, the extra work that he put in during the bye week, catching extra balls at the practices during the bye, really paid off and got back to being, I would say, the Demaryius Thomas that we're used to seeing. But that was more than the Demaryius Thomas we're used to seeing. That was the best that he's been on a game-long basis. So he's right at the top of the list. Chris Harris on defense had a terrific game. Could have easily had two interceptions. That's really the only downgrade on him, is that he didn't actually catch the passes that he had a chance to pick off. But doing a great job in coverage. It's amazing to listen to him talk, and he says he's still conscious of the knee, and he feels like it's still affecting him. But I think the last three games are some of the best games that he's had as a Bronco. And if this is him with the knee injury still on his mind, where is he going to be in a couple of months once he gets past that mental block? And for guys coming off the ACL injury, oftentimes it's the mental block of getting to where you don't think about that knee when you're cutting, when you're moving, you just go. You got to learn to trust. And it says he's not there yet, but he's doing a great job in coverage. Another good game for the pass rush. Von Miller and DeMarcus Ware, they're on their way to their goal of surpassing an entire team with their sack total between themselves. They've got seven among them, so they're off to a good start. And then, back to the offensive side, I thought in the second half, once the run game got going, I thought the interior offensive line did pretty well. I thought Ronnie Hillman was solid, averaging 4.3 yards per carry. But that being said, the running game's emergence in the second half also coincided with Calais Campbell going down to the knee injury. So I think we'll get a better idea in New York, or in New Jersey, I should say, against New York, just how strong that running game is and whether that second half was a fluke or the start of something meaningful.
Linebacker Danny Trevathan made his big return on Sunday after his tibia fracture during the preseason. After the game, I talked to him, and he said that he didn't feel like he was all the way back yet. Conditioning was still something he was focusing on. What did you make of his return?
Well, a very good sign that he played all but three snaps. That means that they trust him. That means he also trusts the leg. I think that part of that was having such a long build up to getting back to being game ready. He was practicing even before the Seattle game, and then he had the bye week to prepare. So he had over 2 weeks of work on the field, and it showed that he was able to step in, pretty seamlessly. There were a couple of mistakes that he made. A certain didn't quite get to the right spot in time. Didn't read a play as well as you're used to seeing from him. But for our first game back, he gave himself a B when I asked him how he would grade himself, and I think that was pretty accurate. And I think certainly it helped the entire defense just having him back. Brandon Marshall settled into his role as the nickel linebacker next to Trevathan. You saw Nate Irvin go back to working, just as a middle linebacker, and it seemed like in that more limited role he was explosive, because obviously he didn't have to play 80-90% of the plays like he used to. So I think just having him back helped, and I think he'll be in line for a bigger game this week.
I also had the chance to talk with Chris Harris Jr. and Von Miller, both of whom were coming off their ACL injuries from previous seasons. Obviously, they've been back for a little while now, but each of them both said that they're not quite fully healthy yet, and they don't think they'll be there for a while. They're just focusing on making these steps. Chris Harris and Aqib Talib both talked about getting adjusted to the players still, and those coming off injuries and those who were signed in the offseason. At the locker room on Wednesday, they both spoke to us about it.
You had the best game. You think that's the best game of your life? It could always be better once you watch it on tape, man. So, we know it was a decent game. We had to come out on paper and it looked good. But, I mean, the quarterback turned his head this way one of those plays, man, it might not look as good, because we had a missed error, guy running free, So, I mean, we definitely can get a lot better. I mean, the defense, as good as you said that was, man, we had maybe a ton of MEs within those 115 yards. But we could have limited that 115 yards to about 30 yards, so we could be good, man. We just got to keep playing with each other, man. Stay on our stuff, stay talking and communicating in a meeting rooms, and man, we could be pretty good.
We have a lot of improvement, and I'm still learning how to play with TJ, still learning how to, even just getting Danny back, it's just a lot of communication things that you have to work through, and health-wise, we're still working back, and I think, it's the sky's the limit for us, man. We're just going to continue to get better, and same thing with Von. And it's a long process going through the injuries that we had to go through, and we won't be fully ourselves probably until next season.
Now, seeing how they said that they've got even more room to improve, how much do you think we can see this defense get better as the season goes on?
I think they can get substantially better, of course. That being said, it's going to be key to keep the entire defense healthy. I mean, that if they recover and they take the next steps and then someone else gets hurt, then you're kind of at a wash almost. So, let's see how well the defense can stay intact. Certainly if they can have their starting 11 out there, then it's a defense that has a very high ceiling. We saw that in the last three quarters against Arizona. Didn't allow a third down conversion in the last three quarters. And if not for the 81 yard touchdown where Logan Thomas threaded the needle, Andre Ellington, you're talking about a well under 200 yards allowed against an offense that was looking pretty good going into that game. So, certainly the signs are there that it can be an elite defense, but it needs to stay healthy and just needs to gel a little bit more. You can still see that guys are kind of getting used to each other, knowing where the guy next to them is going to be. There's still that transition that they're in. So I think they're still a little ways away from being that elite unit, but they're getting closer every game.
With Monte Ball going down in the third quarter, what impact did that loss have on the rushing offense, and how well did they make up for it?
Well, it did not have much of an impact as far as the production, certainly, if anything. They had one of their better running halves, maybe their best running half of the season, or at least their best since week two after he went down. But like I mentioned earlier, you have to take the absence of Calais Campbell in the second half into effect when you assess whether the running game has made progress or not. Ronnie Hillman, got most of the carries in replacement of Monte Ball. Looks solid. Ronnie Hillman had most of the carries in place of Ball. He looked solid. He did a good job reading the holes when they were presented to him. Had a did nice job of reading one crease in particular, getting a 16-yard gain. That so he was solid. Juwan Thompson battling a knee injury. He looked good in limited work. Three carries, 15 yards, and a touchdown, and also a key block that allowed Peyton Manning to find Julius Thomas for Manning's fourth touchdown pass. So, you know, it didn't really affect the rushing offense as a whole because the backups did pretty well. You know, we'll get into in a little bit what's going to mean for the Jets game.
Thank you, Mace. Now let's turn to the AFC West rundown. Though the win certainly doesn't hurt, the Broncos couldn't gain any ground in the divisional race this week because of the Chargers' fourth consecutive win. Those two are tops in the AFC West, followed by the Chiefs and the Raiders. Though the Raiders had an exciting week of digging a hole in the ground and then putting a football in it, they had a bye, so we'll skip them this week. Back with me for our AFC West recap are our correspondents, Warren Judici and David Deshaun. Let's begin with the Chiefs, who lost a tough one to the 49ers on the road. Lauren, what happened in the Bay Area on Sunday?
Well, like you said, the Chiefs fell to the 49ers in San Francisco, and though it was a loss, there is some positive takeaways for the Chiefs, and it kind of proved, especially in the first half, that they're getting close to where they feel they should be, and they only allowed the Colin Kaepernick and the 49ers one touchdown and held them to 5 field goals. And though they still lost, I mean, you know, they had definitely held their own in the red zone. And, you know, Travis Kelce, who the Broncos know quite well from week 2, got Kansas City on the board first with a 2-yard touchdown reception. And he now has touchdown catches in 3 straight games. And he's definitely kind of breaking out this season. DeAnthony Thomas, who missed the Chiefs' first 4 games with a sore hamstring, showed some serious potential. On his very first NFL touch, he returned a third quarter punt for 28 yards to give the Chiefs some excellent field position. And then 4 plays later, he caught a short swing pass and took it 17 yards for a touchdown. And that allowed the Chiefs to retake the lead. But unfortunately for them, that was the last time they would score. And the 49ers really controlled the ball all of the second half, and the Chiefs couldn't gain any momentum. With the 49ers down by 1 in the first minute of the fourth quarter, the Niners executed a fake punt successfully, and Colin Kaepernick took the team downfield, and that drive ended in a 27-yard field goal. And that fake punt and a penalty for 12 men on the field by the Chiefs on a field goal attempt late in the fourth quarter really helped the 49ers control the clock. You know, it really was a tale of two halves in this game. You know, the Chiefs' defense did a really stand-up job containing the 49ers in the first half, especially on the ground, holding the Niners to 65 yards on 13 carries, which against Colin Kaepernick and his many weapons, that's pretty good. But in the second half, the Chiefs just couldn't sustain drives, and that kept the defense on the field, and that allowed the 49ers to control the ball for 23 minutes of that second half, and they accumulated 106 rushing yards in that half, and the Chiefs only had 15 offensive plays. Alex Smith finished the game 17 of 31 for 175 yards and 2 touchdowns, and the 1 interception, and the interception came at the very end of the game to seal the loss. But the first half was really when he stood out, like the defense. He finished that first 30 minutes 12 of 19 for 117 yards and 1 touchdown. And in that half, Jamal Charles ran the ball 11 times for 49 yards. So in the game, Charles ran for a total of 80 yards to eclipse Larry Johnson for second place on Kansas City's career rushing list. But he was kind of a non-factor in the game. A big issue the Chiefs, I think, are dealing with is their run defense. Frank Gore ran for 107 yards, and Carlos Hyde gained an additional 43 in the game. The Niners' offensive line really came up big for them, especially towards the end of the game on third down. They helped make some key third down plays, but the Chiefs' pass rush seemed to be in sync, and Alan Bailey recorded 1.5 sacks, and Justin Houston had 1, and he now has 6 sacks on the season. And you know, the Chiefs' struggles on defense are definitely likely caused by the absence of Derek Johnson, Joe Mays, Mike DeVito, and safety Eric Berry, but Mays and Berry should return later in the season.
Unfortunately for Kansas City, the Chiefs now dropped to 2-3 on the season, ending their quick little 2-game win streak. Thankfully for the city, they at least have the Royals to cheer behind. But how is the rest of the Chiefs' outlook for this season shaping up?
Yeah, so now the Chiefs are a full 2 games behind the first place Chargers in the AFC West. And so now they have a bye week, and then they head to face the Chargers in San Diego. And I mean, you got to think that this is pretty much a must-win if they want to remain relevant in the division picture. And I think even though this was a loss, there were some positives to take away. I mean, it was a little, it looked bleak for the Chiefs after an 0-2 start, and they turned it around with wins over the Patriots and Dolphins. And I think that Patriots win was definitely a statement win for this team. I mean, we saw on Sunday night that the Patriots, they're not duds, they're good. And so I think that that win is definitely important for these Chiefs. And the loss of Derek Johnson has definitely been tough for this team. You never want to lose a defensive captain, but I think getting Jamaal Charles back, and he's obviously found his groove, and you know, the 1-2 punch with him and Nile Davis along with Travis Kelce, I think that bodes well for the team. You know, they're 2-3, but I do think that there are some positives for this team, and I think they're working their way back after that 0-2 start. But I will say that it looks like the AFC West is going to be pretty tough this year, and they've got a tough schedule ahead. And I mean, I think it'll be definitely interesting to see how this all plays out for the Chiefs.
The Chargers took home their fourth straight win with a romp over the Jets 31-0. The offense and defense both clicked in this one. David, what happened in the game on Sunday?
Well, obviously the final score wasn't pretty, and I think we could probably say that a lot of that had to do with the Jets not playing well. Geno Smith was very poor, was pulled at halftime for Michael Vick, who was not any better. Between the two of them, they went 12 of 31 for 74 yards, pretty meager there. Geno also threw a pick down the field to Brandon Flowers. But really, you still need to give the Chargers some credit here. Rex Ryan put the loss on him. He said he was out-coached by Mike McCoy, the former Broncos offensive coordinator. But the Chargers really were prepared for everything the Jets threw at them. On defense, they got plenty of pressure with Dwight Freeney. They really made Geno and Michael Vick uncomfortable back there, and that had a lot to do with why they struggled. They also had really good coverage. Their rookie Jason Verrett is playing pretty well, and Brandon Flowers has been excellent, making that signing look pretty smart after he was released by the Chiefs. He had the interception again, as I mentioned earlier. So they're playing really well on that side of the ball. Obviously, we know what Phillip Rivers has been doing on the other side of the ball, and he really handled Rex Ryan's blitzes well in this game. Rex Ryan has dialed up lots of exotic looks against quarterbacks this year. He's actually created a lot of pressure and a lot of sacks without having a top pass rusher per se. But the Chargers really picked those up in this game, and Rivers dealt with the traffic, moved through it, kept his eyes downfield, and really hit some big throws on what's a pretty weak secondary for the Jets. Also, we saw a player flash for San Diego, Brandon Oliver. He's their fourth string running back now. They've lost Ryan Matthews to injury, Donald Brown, Danny Woodhead. Brandon Oliver, wearing number 43, looks a lot like Darren Sproles. He's kind of a thicker, more muscular Darren Sproles, very low to the ground, low center of gravity, and he racked up the yardage in this game. He had 182 total yards. He scored on a rushing touchdown and also on a receiving touchdown, the second of which he took this monstrous hit right after he caught the ball from Calvin Pryor, the Jets' first-round pick, went right through it, bowled him over and into the end zone for a touchdown. Very impressive, so definitely a highlight for San Diego there. With the way that the Chargers offense carved up the Jets defense, I think that's kind of something the Broncos can look to follow this week. The Jets will be reeling a little bit, but obviously the secondary is a weak spot for the Jets. We know Peyton Manning can pick apart secondaries. We know he can beat the blitz like he showed last week against the Cardinals, so it'll be interesting to see how Rex Ryan tries to challenge him, whether he comes at him with the blitz or whether he sits back in coverage.
In such an overwhelmingly positive game, I mean, shutting out an opponent is no easy task. Were there any negatives you saw from the Chargers?
Not too many negatives, but they do have some mounting injury issues. We talked about the running back situation. Obviously, it's good that Brandon Oliver's looking better, but Donald Brown left with a concussion in this game. We've also talked previously about their center issues. They were down to their third center last week, and he wasn't playing well, Doug Ligurski. He went out with an injury, and he's now on injured reserve for the year. So they are signing Trevor Robinson from the Cincinnati practice squad to be their center until Rich Orenberger, who is their second center, can get back from an injury. Obviously, that's a bit of a sticky situation. It hasn't affected Rivers too much so far, but we'll see what happens there. Another small negative, we talked last week about how Chargers have actually had some issues in the red zone. They haven't been very efficient in the red zone. They picked that up this week. They were 4 of 5 scoring touchdowns, but Philip Rivers threw an interception in the end zone. It was his first interception since week one. That said, it was a really fantastic play by the defensive back. Not at all a bad throw. Jets fumbled the ball away afterwards, so it didn't come down to hurt them too much. But the errors in the red zone, something to keep an eye on, just in case those come back to haunt the Chargers later. Next up for the Chargers will be a trip to Oakland, where they'll play the Raiders in the first game since Dennis Allen has been fired. Tony Sperano is now the interim head coach. They buried a football this week to get rid of their 0-4 woes, so we'll see if that has any effect. It's interesting, the Chargers have actually struggled going to Oakland of late. They've lost three of their last four in Oakland, including last year they played that weird late game that was pushed back because of the Athletics baseball game. I think it kicked off around 8:30 Pacific time, so almost a middle of the night game, and the Chargers really never got it going. They lost that one. So it'll be interesting to see how they handle the trip to the black hole with a team that should be fired up to play for their interim head coach.
Now, looking forward to the Broncos game against the Jets this coming Sunday, they hope to have the same kind of success that the Chargers did as the Jets face their back-to-back AFC West slate. Mace, after such a successful game through the air against Arizona, how do you see the Broncos attacking the Jets' passing defense?
Well, I'm not sure how much of the deep passes that we're going to see against the Jets, because they do a very good job getting quick pressure from the interior of their 3-4 linemen. Sheldon Richardson and Muhammad Wilkerson in particular are two guys they've combined for 31 quarterback hits over the course of five games this year. They've both got three sacks. They're both generating consistent pressure, and because they're doing it, from that five technique type position, that means it's quick pressure because they're going inside the guards usually to attack the quarterback. So that means I think you're going to see a lot of drags and quick slants and quick outs. It may not be a vertical passing game, but it certainly it can be an effective passing game. This is the kind of game I think in which a guy like Wes Welker could have a good day. I think you'll also see Julius Thomas in position to have a good day. So the thing that makes this passing offense work is it works horizontally. It also succeeds vertically. There's really not a hole in the passing game overall. I didn't even mention Emmanuel Sanders. He's obviously done a lot, getting open downfield, but maybe this is a game where he has a role like he did when he played for Pittsburgh, and he's getting more underneath stuff and has to make plays after the catch. So, maybe the passing game is going to look a little bit different against the Jets, but there's no reason it can't be just as effective.
It almost seems like we have a weekly segment talking if this is the game that the running offense gets going. But after their pretty successful second half against the Cardinals, do you think they can continue that success against the Jets' rushing defense that currently ranks sixth?
That's going to be tough. Again, like mentioned earlier, that the Broncos did well once Calais Campbell was injured against the Cardinals. Well, now you're going against a very good front three and some solid linebackers. These are guys that don't let a lot of plays do much on the second level or get past the second level. These are guys that are pretty good at filling gaps right there at the line of scrimmage. I don't think this is going to be the breakout game for the Broncos running backs without Monte Ball. I think that may be another week or two in coming. This game, what you're hoping for is not a high per carry average, but you're hoping for an effective running game in terms of getting first down. So, if they can get 2 yards on third and one, 3 yards on third and two, if they're making plays like that, if they're able to not lose yardage on first down runs, if they're able to just get like two or three and kind of keep the line moving, then I think you'll call that a successful game against a very strong run defense.
Ronnie Hillman will of course be making the start, but do you see him or maybe Juwan Thompson? Who's going to break out from the depth at running back here?
Ronnie Hillman's the first guy up at this point, so I think he's the most likely to get the most carries. Juwan Thompson, he missed Wednesday's practice with a knee injury. That's going to probably be something that it ends up being a game-time decision on him. And then you have C.J. Anderson, who was not active against the Cardinals. He was the number two back early in the season. The thing with C.J. Anderson is he doesn't have an extensive special teams role, and that's a big part of the reason why you saw Juwan Thompson active against the Cardinals and not C.J. Anderson. But against the Jets, against a stout run defense where you're almost just, you're asking your running back to kind of to burrow for yards at times, then it could line up for C.J. Anderson to have a pretty solid day on Sunday, because he's better than Ronnie Hillman at kind of getting his body almost into a ball and kind of burrowing his way through a line and kind of and finding 2 or 3 yards where it may not exist. You know, Ronnie needs some space to operate. C.J. Anderson is better in the trenches. So I think Anderson is going to have a pretty decent role in this game and could be the guy that ends up moving the sticks more often. But I think Ronnie Hillman will end up having the most carries.
Talking about the Jets' offense, you of course have to talk about their quarterback situation. They benched their starter Geno Smith and turned to Mike Vick, and then they had some weird issues with Geno missing a meeting because of time change difference. What do you make of their quarterback situation?
Well, unless Rex Ryan has been leading us all astray the last few days, Geno Smith's going to get another shot. He's going to start Sunday, but I think he's going to be on a very short leash at this point. The thing I see from him when I watch him is I think he's regressed a bit this year. Now, some of that, you know, teams have an off season to scheme and study, and they plot and game plan better, and that's why the test of a young quarterback is rarely that first year, but that second year once everyone's had a chance to get a full season of film and study and adapt. But what I see from Geno Smith, I mean, is a guy who is not as decisive as you want a quarterback to be. I mean, it's almost like he knows that he could take off and run and pick up 7, 8, 10 yards, but he also is trying to make himself into more of a passer who's going to throw the ball first and trust his arm. So because of that, you know, maybe he thinks about running and then he decides to throw. What I want to see from Geno Smith is I want to see him be decisive one way or the other, whether you're going to run the ball or throw the ball. Don't dart around in the backfield. Don't make the zigzag all over the place like he's been doing. Just either commit to the run or commit to the throw one way or the other. It's that indecision that kills him. And if he has that indecision against a Bronco defense that, like we talked about earlier, is on the rise and certainly has all of its key components back for the first time all season, at least got them all back last week against Arizona, then I think Geno Smith's going to be in trouble, and then I think you'll see them put Michael Vick in there. The thing with Michael Vick is, you know, he's experienced. He's had his ups and downs. He's not the explosive runner that he used to be, but that experience helps him make prudent decisions. He's more decisive than Geno Smith. He's going to commit to the run. He's going to commit to the throw. And he also knows when to give up on a play. If nobody's open, he'll throw it away, rather than Geno Smith kind of extending a play and sometimes getting into trouble. So we'll see how the game goes. I think that if Geno Smith struggles, we will see Vic at some point.
With the Jets' passing offense, suffice to say it's been inconsistent. Where do they go facing this improving Broncos defense? The Broncos currently rank 7th in rushing defense, and New York's rushing offense has generally been, I wouldn't say it's been an extremely bright spot, but compared to their passing offense, it's not been their weakest point.
Well, if you're the Jets, you have to run the ball. That's the path to victory. It's what their offense does best, and some long, sustained drives are also going to keep the Broncos' offense off the field. So that's what you have to do. You know, Chris Ivory, Chris Johnson have been a solid duo. The Jets are 7th in yards per carry, but then what I think is interesting is they're 17th in the percentage of runs that go for first downs, and what that usually indicates is that that they're getting some garbage yards on 3rd and long, you know, because and that's helping your per carry average, but it's not helping your first down percentage. You know, to go to what Broncos offense coordinator Adam Gase talks about, he talks about an efficient running game, which is why, you know, he's not focused on yards per game. He's focused on things like yards per carry, and he's focused on things like first down percentage. You know, understandably, a 2-yard gain on 3rd and 1 is a successful run. That's kind of done the job. It's, you know, kept the line moving, so to speak. So, you know, the Jets aren't the best team at keeping it going. I think what they want to do is they want to do well on first down, do well on second down. They want to have 3rd and 2, 3rd and 3. Rather than 3rd and 10, 3rd and 11, 3rd and 12, where they call a draw play or the quarterback scrambles and gets 7 or 8 yards that helps your per carry average, but you know, does nothing for your first down percentage. So I think we'll see what the Jets try to do. But if they are in third and longs and they're running the ball, then I think that's going to continue their pattern of having a runoff rush offense that gets some yards but isn't the most effective at moving the chains.
Thank you, Mace. The game is at 11 a.m. Mountain Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time. The Jets are surely hungry to bounce back from their embarrassing shutout loss last week. So you won't want to miss it. The game is on CBS. Be sure to tune in. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.